Welcome to this Yahoo Finance special, The Great Resignation. Over the next half hour, we'll be taking a deep dive into the 2021 labor shortage and find out why everyday Americans are dropping out of the workforce despite the uncertainties caused by the COVID-19 pandemic. Throughout the past year, we've seen U.S. workers take power away from their employers, demanding higher wages and additional benefits, some simply walking away from their job altogether. So what's the driving force behind this economic trend and what's in store for the job market in 2022? Let's get right into it. Yahoo Finance's Emily McCormick has been crunching the numbers on the job market this year. And Emily, one thing that has stood out to me is really this plunge in the unemployment rate from the start of the year.
Absolutely, Brian. The labor market has made some meaningful strides toward recovering this year, but it still isn't back to pre-pandemic conditions on several major metrics. Now, I'll start with a look back at non-farm payrolls, since that is one of the key monthly numbers we track on the recovery. Now, U.S. employers have added back payrolls in every single month so far in 2021, with as many as about 1.1 million jobs added back in July alone, and as few as 210,000 jobs added back as of the latest jobs report for November. Now, the unemployment rate has also come down, as you mentioned. It last improved to a reading of 4.2% in November, but that's still above the 50-year low of 3.5% seen before the pandemic. And the same magnitude of improvements hasn't been seen for all Americans. Both the Black or African American and Hispanic or Latino unemployment rates were still above the national average as of November, albeit while both improving compared to the prior month. And even with the steady overall payroll gains throughout the year, employment is still below levels from February 2020. Before the pandemic meaningfully impacted the job market. And recall that more than 22 million jobs were lost between March and April 2020 alone, so the economy is still making up for that deficit. Now, this has been especially clear in the size of the civilian labor force, which is still much smaller than it was before the virus. As of November, the civilian labor force was down by 2.4 million workers compared to February 2020, and the labor force participation rate was last at 61.8%, or short of February 2020. 63.3%. And while more Americans are on the sidelines of the labor force than before the pandemic, job vacancies have soared, especially in the second half of this year. Now, as vaccinations began ramping up in the U.S. in the spring and summer, demand for goods and services and going back out again began to surge, but hiring didn't keep pace with that demand. Now, it's especially been true for the service economy, which had already been hit hard during the pandemic with stay-in-place orders and layoffs, and was struggling to bring back enough workers to keep pace with the pickup in dining out, traveling on airplanes, and shopping in stores. And in July, we should note that job openings hit a record high of nearly 11.1 million in the U.S. As the latest data for October, those vacancies were still above the 11 million mark, and that labor supply has been the economy's biggest challenge has also shown up in weekly jobless claims, which hit the lowest level since 1969 in early December at 184,000. So with all these things in mind, the labor market as it stands now has been described by many economists as exceptionally tight. And with participation still yet to return to its pre-virus levels, getting enough workers to meet supply, to meet demand, is one of the key factors that does need to be resolved in order to further this economic recovery, Brian.
All right, Emily, hang out there. We're going to talk more jobs here. Let's bring in Betsy Stevenson, a professor of public policy and economics at the University of Michigan. She also served as a member of the Council of Economic Advisor under President Barack Obama. Betsy, always nice to see you. So as we look back on the labor market this year, what has surprised you?
I think a lot of things have surprised me. In one sense, what surprised me is how quickly we really have recovered. That is the glass half full story. But I mean, you just heard a description of just enormous demand for workers. And a lot of people didn't see that coming. You know, if you talk to people when this pandemic first started, they were worried that, you know, employers would be looking to automate and to replace workers with technology because technology doesn't get COVID. And in fact, what we've seen is just record job openings. If we filled every single job opening that's out there right now, we'd have employment that was not just well above where we were pre-pandemic, but well above what anyone predicted pre-pandemic. So that recovery and employers wanting to hire workers is there. The challenge is that we still have just like a lot of uncertainty going on in the labor market. A lot of what economists talk about is churn. People who are exiting jobs more frequently than they used to, exiting the labor market more frequently than they used to, entering jobs and entering the labor market more frequently. So that's just like a lot of turmoil that's going on underneath that good news story.
Betsy, this is Emily here. You talked about the near record number of vacancies we're seeing across the economy right now. Why aren't workers coming back faster?
Well, I think it's not really about workers not coming back faster. If you look underneath the data, one of the things is that we still have an elevated rate at which people are leaving the labor market. So every single month, millions of people enter the labor market and millions of people exit the labor market. Now, if things just aren't going right in their family or the job, you know, they lost their job and they didn't see another one, so they left the labor market. We're still seeing elevated exits among some people, particularly lower educated workers. So workers without a college degree are still exiting at very high rates. And I think one of the things we want to do is slow the exit rate down, not just speed up the entrance rate. Like, you were focused on the entrance rate. Now, where should we be focused on the entrance rate? Well, it turns out that's one of the big problems we have with older workers. So some researchers have shown that we didn't actually see a big increase in the number of older workers retiring. What we've seen is a big decrease in unretirement. In a normal economy, people retire and then they change their mind and they take on some other kind of job. What we've seen with COVID is older workers are not re-entering the labor market. They're not coming back. And I think that is because of the risk of the virus is keeping some workers, particularly older workers, from wanting to come back into the labor market. I think one of the reasons we're seeing that still that high rate of exits is not just about workers not wanting to work, but the rate at which they're actually losing their jobs. Anytime somebody loses their job, they're at a high risk of leaving the labor market. And we are still seeing that high rate of jobs letting workers go because of all the turmoil underneath the economy due to COVID. So restaurants just figuring out they can't make it, or hotels not getting the customers that they need, or retail stores realizing that they were doing better online. They end up letting a lot of workers go, and those workers are at a higher risk of exiting.
And Betsy, isn't the other problem here, we have not addressed the core issue of childcare. And I'll use a family member as example. You know, she had to leave the workforce and care to her three young kids during the pandemic. And now, because of that, and just the fact she's no longer working, her path to the workforce is not exactly clear right now. How does this get solved?
Yeah, well, there is a little bit of a chicken and the egg problem here, because we don't have all of the childcare workers back. In fact, we're still missing roughly 1 in 10 childcare workers. We're also actually missing a lot of nursing home workers. So it's not just childcare, it's also care for adults who need care or elder care. And what we have is people who are providing this care at home. And because they're providing the care at home, they're at an increased risk of not being able to take on another job or do paid labor. And so, you know, we got to hire people to be able to do those kinds of jobs if we want people to go back to other kinds of jobs. But we are having a hard time attracting workers into caregiving settings because caregiving jobs became riskier. They do come with a much higher risk of COVID now. And those have been our jobs that are lowest paying. And the lowest paying jobs are where we're seeing the biggest wage gains right now. So if you look at who is winning in the battle between increasing wages and inflation, lower wage workers are winning in that battle because that's who are getting the biggest wage gains. That can be a problem, though, for families who are paying for childcare and they just don't have what it takes to be able to pay for that more expensive childcare that comes with paying a childcare worker, say $15, $16, $17 an hour instead of $12 an hour. So you got to pay the childcare workers more, but how do you pay the childcare workers more without charging the families more? You charge the families more, and then it can be hard to go back to work because you literally can't afford to work because of that high cost of childcare. And I think that's why you need a policy solution to the rising cost of care.
Betsy, speaking of wage gains you were mentioning earlier, we last saw average hourly earnings up 4.8% on a year-over-year basis in November. Is this pace going higher? And do you see wage increases feeding into continued inflation as we look ahead to next year?
I don't think that, so some people are worried that a shortage of workers is pushing up wages, which ultimately ends up pushing up prices. that's not really the wage price spiral, though. I think one of the things people really worry about is everybody goes to their boss and everybody says, look, prices are up. I want a 4% raise. Otherwise, you're giving me a real pay cut, which is true. So I understand why they're making that request. And then if everybody gets that wage increase from their boss, you can start to see that pushing through more normalized, higher inflation than, say, 2%. But that's not what we're seeing in the data right now. What we're seeing is some workers are getting a raise and others are not. And the ones who are getting a raise tend to be the lowest wage workers. So those in the bottom 40% of the income distribution. And we're also seeing it coming from people who are changing jobs. So we're seeing the people who are moving to new jobs, to better jobs, are seeing the big wage gains. And we're seeing people particularly, you know, in the middle and in closer to the top, who are just sticking at their old job, are not getting as big of a pay increase. So there's a little bit of redistribution going on there.
Point well taken. Betsy Stevenson, professor of public policy of economics at the University of Michigan. Always appreciate you sharing some jobs analysis with us. Emily McCormick, always good to see you as well. All right, coming up, Yahoo Finance senior columnist Rick Newman joins us next for a look at how government policy shaped this year's labor market. Stick around. Welcome back. As to be expected, President Joe Biden wasted no time trying to shape this year's labor market by pushing through various economic stimulus measures. Yahoo Finance senior columnist Rick Newman is here for more on this. Rick, good to see you. I know you've been following this very closely. What do you think is the most important measure that the president implemented this year?
Well, he's got two accomplishments so far, and the third one is coming along. So the first one was that big rescue package, of course. And that was really not focused on the economy we have today. The premise there was that people are still hurting. We were still in a deep hole from the COVID pandemic. And of course, the economy improved a lot better than people expected. So a lot of relief aid went. That was another round of stimulus checks and extended jobless aid to a lot of people. Then, of course, the infrastructure package, that is not focused on the economy of today either. That's focused on the economy of the next 10 years. And the same is really true of the Build Back Better legislation that Democrats are still trying to pass in Congress. So, you know, Biden knew when he came into office, his main job was to get the nation back to normal and get us over the COVID pandemic. We are not back to normal. And meanwhile, those three legislative packages really were not focused so much on COVID, but on longer term things where Democrats are trying to improve the social safety net, do some green energy investments and things like that. So Biden's approval rating has come down about 15 points since he took office. It's pretty low right now. And I think it's because he's had trouble addressing the immediate issues in the economy, and he's been going after these longer term goals with this legislation.
Rick, I know you love giving presidents grades. What grade would you give Joe Biden on the jobs front for this year?
Well, I grade the Biden economy. I don't grade Biden himself. I just grade the economy. And the Biden economy right now is at a B level. That does match up with the data. I mean, we have seen a really strong jobs recovery. Bessie Stevenson was just talking about that. And Biden is not shy about taking credit for that. He uses all the superlatives, you know, the most jobs created of any presidency since, I don't know, George Washington, probably. But Biden didn't really accomplish that. That's just been the economy and private companies recovering and Americans getting COVID fatigue and wanting to go back out and shop and travel and stuff like that. I think Biden deserves some credit for a pretty competent rollout of the vaccines. But of course, nobody foresaw the Delta variant. No one foresaw the Omicron variant. And it's obvious now this pandemic is going to be with us for some time. And that is going to, you know, we're going to get the jobs back at some point. Whether Biden's going to get credit for that from voters is a totally different question.
Rick, Betsy was just talking about the labor shortage here. Why do you think Americans are not returning to jobs quicker?
Everybody wants a simple answer to this question, and there is not a simple answer. So I think one thing that we have figured out is the federal jobless aid. You heard a lot of Republicans complaining that people were getting so much money from the government that they didn't have to work. And we had some of those Republican governors who said citizens in their states couldn't even collect that jobless aid after some point over the summer. But that did not really turn out to be something that was keeping people from looking for jobs. That all of that aid expired in September, and we did not see a huge return of workers in October and November. So that may have been a factor on the margins, but other things are going on. Betsy Stevenson talked about child care. I mean, this is a huge problem in the country. A lot of parents who would like to work, they can't because they can't find affordable child care. Some people are still, they still are worried about getting COVID on the job. And then we had early retirees, people who said, you know, I'm in my late 50s or 60s. I've been thinking about retiring in a couple of years, but now seems good enough. And people are finding the money to live without the incomes that they used to have. We will see if that changes in the next year or two. But we're in the midst of a giant restart here.
And before we let you go, Rick, you briefly mentioned the infrastructure package. Now, we've talked to Secretary Buttigieg about this. Of course, they have their view that this will be a job creator. I mean, do you think this is a major job creator next year?
No. I have not seen any economic analysis saying this is going to be a game changer in terms of total employment. But look what's happening in the economy. We don't need more jobs right now. The infrastructure spending is going to take place over 10 years. The Biden administration has been careful not to make the mistake the Obama administration made back in 2009 with that rescue bill. And they talked about all the shovel-ready projects, and those shovel-ready projects, you know, took 5 years to get going. And people felt like they didn't really see the impact of this giant spending plan. So Biden has been pretty careful to characterize this as something that the United States needs to improve its productivity over the long term. And, you know, when you have 11 million jobs open right now, almost record highs, that's without any impact from the infrastructure plan. So I don't think we're going to see a lot of jobs coming from that next year. But the good news for Biden is we got plenty of other jobs.
Rick Newman bringing the fire well into the evening. Rick, we'll check you tomorrow. Appreciate it.
See you, Brian.
Coming up, Recruiter.com Chairman and CEO Evan Sohn joins us for a look into what job seekers should expect in early 2022. Stay tuned for that chat. Welcome back. Our next guest says it will continue to be an employee's job market through at least the first half of next year, but hiring will be competitive, and by and large, the great resignation will persist. Recruiter.com Chairman and CEO Evan Sohn joins us now. Evan, nice to see you here in the evening here. Why do you think the great resignation will continue?
So, look, I think, as Rick just said, there's been this bent up or built up resignations that's been happening in the U.S. economy, right? So there's always churn. There's been historic 20 to 22% voluntary churn in the U.S. So there's always been this churn. Every single month there's churn. And so people sort of stayed put, if you will, during the pandemic. They moved, they didn't move, et cetera. And now all of a sudden, we called it at the beginning of October, the great resignation is upon us. I think the other thing that we're starting to see really is what we call the great reevaluation. Right, companies are reevaluating how they're bringing employees back. Employees are reevaluating what their priorities are. It's not just about compensation anymore. It's about new experiences. It's about work-life balance, about progression, et cetera. And I think these are all really playing into this sort of great resignation that's really not going to go away very quickly. It might slow down in terms of the actual numbers of churn. But at the same time, we're seeing this job hopper economy. So more and more people are going to be leaving jobs sooner than they were leaving before. And I think these are all things that are really building into this demand. And it truly is a candidate's market today. I think some other things that's really interesting is that it's much, much easier today to apply to a job. You know, think about the expression, it's a full-time job to find a job. That was not written in 2021 or 2022. You know, that was written a decade ago, where in order to interview for a job, you brought a business attire to the office, you had to take the afternoon off, you had to go. It was a whole cloak and dagger thing. Today, it's really about, gee, we're going to interview over some sort of video interviewing platform. It's much, much easier to interview. And if I could work from anywhere, certainly I could also hire from anywhere. So it just gives a lot of more flexibility to people in terms of the ability to take a job. You know, think about all the jobs that one didn't look at because they were geographically undesirable. Certainly for the knowledge workers, that's not really happening. So you see here now on this chart now with our partnership with Revelio Labs, looking at the sectors with the highest job numbers, pretty exciting for us as Recruiter.com, that recruiting is really in the top two, not job demand. And we reported the other day that, like, I think there were more open jobs on one platform for recruiters than there were actually for software engineers. Clearly, the hospital and the healthcare sector, a lot of job demands. We're also seeing a lot of movement in that area, retail as well. So we're certainly seeing lots of demand. You know, as you mentioned before in the other segment, there's plenty of jobs that are actually going on in the U.S. now, 11 million record highs, et cetera, in terms of open jobs. It's actually filling those jobs that are getting more complicated. We're seeing a lot bigger demand for a bigger funnel. Used to be that let's generalize for a second. If you need to look at, you know, 50 resumes to hire one person, you might need to be looking at 300 resumes to hire that same one person, or now 400 resumes to hire two people because one's going to leave before the other one actually starts.
Evan, let me toss you this hot potato. Isn't the part of the problem here with this labor shortage that management still is disconnected from the employees, those employees that are burnt out? They don't understand, you know, those higher ups don't understand what's happening in the average lives of their workers here. How big a problem is that?
Yeah. So again, I prefer to use the word, you know, and both, right? There are companies that do and there are companies that don't. I think when we started tracking candidate sentiment as reported by the recruiters, we saw compensation this last month hit 24%, 25%, really a low as we started tracking this in the Recruiter.com Recruiter Index. And what it really says is that 75% of priorities were not compensation related. So paying someone extra money is not actually going to do it. In fact, we saw a survey that said that 25% of people reported would take less of a salary to have remote work or work-life balance, et cetera. So I think employers need to really change the way that they talk about the actual job itself. Again, if we think of we're entering this sort of job hopper economy, you know, how do you get people coming out of college to take a call center job or a job that's less, less thrilling, if you will? You have to turn it into an experience. Hey, come get your first experience. Here's how you're going to get your first experience. And you got to really change that. And I think for companies to think that it's just about compensation, that's certainly part of this great reevaluation, is it's not just about compensation. It's about culture. It's about training. It's about experience. And it's about progression.
And Evan, what's your best advice before I let you go here? What's your best advice to someone who wants to quit their job today and try to find a better job? What should they be doing?
So make sure your social media profiles are updated. LinkedIn is a great source to find someone at the company itself. I think the statistic is 70% of all jobs are through a warm introduction, which include a recruiter. So you want to make sure that that's going. It also says that, you know, if you're applying for a job online with no sort of third party in between, you probably have a 30% chance of actually getting through. But the other is, you know, really figure out what's going to excite you for the next 24 to 36 months. You're not looking at something that's going to be 5-10 year long. Look at what's your next experience going to look like and how do you go get that experience? And I think those are really the interesting things that we could start looking at as both from the company side and from the candidate side is looking at what the next experience look like, et cetera.
Good advice indeed. Recruiter.com Chairman and CEO Evan Sohn, good to see you. Thanks for hopping on this evening. We'll talk to you soon. All right, that's it for us on this Tuesday evening. I will be back tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. with an interview with Carnival Cruise Line CEO Arnold Donald. Very excited about that one. Have a great evening. We'll check you in the morning.